It's March the 17th, St. Patty's Day. Yippee, yippee, yippee. So we have an exam coming up on Thursday. And I don't really want to push it out a day because we're already a week behind. And sometimes what we've done is we push it out a day and we used another day that we would use Thursday to review and then waste about half the period showing you something that's not going to be on the exam. So I don't want to do that because we have plenty of time to get done the rest of chapter 6 today. Afterwards, or if we still have time going after the, before the class is over, we will go through worksheet number 2. So those of you who feel a little uncomfortable with the calculations from chapter 6 can stick around and we'll go through worksheet number 2 together. We're almost finished worksheet number 1. We went through the first several problems. And we're going to finish up with the discounted cash flow model, which is so cool! And then we'll take a look at a very special system. And I forgot the examples, the current examples. We have one from the book, which is going to be on the screen for you. But first we need a good joke. Who's got a good joke? Anybody got a good joke? When it's an Irish joke? Irish jokes are about drinking, right? So anyway, at this pub in a small little village in Ireland, the undisputed champion of drinking is Patrick. And he takes all drinking challenges and always wins. So this Dubliner comes in, this city slicker comes in and says, I'll give £100 to the man who could drink 10 pints of water, 10 pints of Guinness, a stout, in a row. And all eyes turned to Patrick. And he calmly got up and walked out. They were astonished. About 15 minutes later, he walks in and says, I'll take that bet, Mr. City Slicker. And they line up the 10 drinks, and he drinks them one right after another. And they are amazed, and he wins the 100 pounds. And they said, Patrick, what happened? Where did you go? He said, I went down to Fitzgerald's pub to make sure I could do it first. See, Irish joke. Okay, and now, where are we? Actually, that was a bit of a shock last week. Are you getting used to volatility? It's volatile. If you've been watching it jump up and down, yesterday the DAX, the German exchange, went up over almost 3%, 2.68. Today it's down 1.5%, so volatility is happening, folks. And you just got to be ready, And as Mr. Rothenberg said, it just gives you an opportunity to buy more shares at a better price. Now, as you remember, we went through the dividend discount models. We went through the price ratio models, and then we went through the zero growth model, the constant perpetual model, and this is where we ended up. And we saw that things look not so bad according to these models, because there are those large companies that people think of as boring, stodgy. I want to buy GoPro. I want to buy Tesla. But then you look at Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble and 3M, and you say, well, this doesn't look too bad. And they're not going to, First Solar. They're not First Solar, okay? They're not going to go up 45% in 6 weeks, 8 weeks. But at the same time, they're not going to drop 45%. So in the book will be two other flavors. We did the zero growth model. Have I lost you guys? We did the zero growth model, which was pretty straightforward, and then the constant perpetual growth model, which sounds like the Department of Redundancy Department. And then in the book, they go through the constant growth model, which here's the constant perpetual growth model, and then it adds an additional term to account for our growth for a number of years. This model takes the constant perpetual growth model one step further, adding a term to account for the constant growth for a number of years, just as the constant perpetual growth model evolved from the zero growth model. Do you have to know this one? No. Because we have a tendency not to say, look, we don't know if they're going to grow for 3 or 5 or 10 years. Let's just look 3 years out. And we're going to do that in a bit. And then they take it even one step further. Here is the constant growth model that's on the previous slide. And then we add this thing to show that there are two stages to the dividend growth model. And this looks really exciting, doesn't it, for you math fans? Doesn't that look really slick? And you program it into your calculator or you program it into your computer, your spreadsheet. But look, decades ago, Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing and Warren Buffett's teacher, warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models. So forget that guy. They're on your formula sheet, by the way, but we're not going to ask you to do that. Because we're ready to take a look at some observations of the dividend discount models. How do we use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? If a company isn't paying a dividend, then the dividend discount model says the company's worth zero because there's no dividends. So you can't. The constant perpetual is usually an unrealistic assumption except for those large companies that have been growing their dividends for many years, those stalwarts that have their roots deep in the economy. And dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate. With large cap, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful, often they are, but with fast-growing companies and new interest industries that aren't even paying any dividends or they're paying a very little dividend, it's almost impossible. But the problems of these two dividend discount models that we've looked at so far, zero growth and constant perpetual, notwithstanding, repeat after me, the value of a stock is based on the present value. Some of you aren't talking. The value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. In other words, why are we buying stocks? Because of the earnings and subsequent dividends that we get. Now, this model is my favorite, and it's the one we're going to spend almost all of today doing. Get your worksheet number at one out. The discounted cash flow model, because this is where we see some wonderful stuff happening. This uses the present value of the expected dividends, which we've already been doing with the zero growth model and the constant perpetual model, but it also adds the present value of the expected future price of the value of share of stock. So in other words, the very first model we saw just saw three dividends of $100 a year, and then the stock became worthless. Does that make any sense? Does that make any sense, folks? A company pays three dividends and then goes out of business?
No.
No, let's hope not. I mean, that happens sometimes. Companies go out of business, but we don't want to buy companies that are going out of business, okay? You want to do that? No, you don't want to buy. You want to short companies, don't short. Okay. So here is the formula. The value of a stock is equal to the present value. And now what you'll see them use PV when you go to university, instead of writing out the word present value, which is cool because I like PV. You ever been to Puerto Vallarta? Cool place. Okay. And so present value of the future dividends plus the present value of the future expected value of the stock. And there's on the present value table sheet I gave you last Thursday is a formula. You'll see this formula. So you're going to need that worksheet number one, and you're going to need the present value table. So if you weren't here, remember the present value table? Okay, come up and get one of these. And worksheet number one, too. Here's worksheet number one. So give one to him, too, okay? All right, so now, let's continue. It's also called the dividends and earnings model, but it doesn't use earnings. So figure that one out. Why would they call it the dividends and earnings model when it doesn't use earnings? I don't know, but they do. The value of stock is equal to the present value of the future dividends plus the present value of the price of the stock when we plan to sell. We use the present value multipliers from the table. It, unfortunately, is not covered specifically in our text. But it's really just the pure form of the dividend discount model that we saw at the very beginning when we took a look at the scary terms that everybody's looking, what is that? And it's very sensitive to our estimates and our choice of required rate of return, and hence can be and will be very far off the mark. So here's an example. Let's assume it's January 1st, 2015. We're starting at the beginning of the year. We're going to do it year. Pretzels Unlimited is currently selling for $22 per share and will pay $2 per share in dividends in 2015. They expect to increase their dividends to $2.20 in 2016, $2.30 in 2017, and $2.30 in 2018. And then at the end of 2018, we expect the price to be $27 per share. Our required rate of return is 12%. So how do we do this? Well, take out the present value table. At the present value table, and if you remember, when we first did this, we said, okay, our required rate of return is 15% the first time. I thought that's ridiculous, and even 12 is a little high. But go across to 12%. And down 1 year, and what's the present value multiplier? You see that? Okay, so we take the $2 we're going to get in 1 year, this year, 2015, and we multiply it by 0.893. Next year, we're going to get $2.20. So we go across the 10, 12%, down 2 years, and what's the present value multiplier? 0.979. Everybody see that? Or go, no, Frank, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Okay, now go to the third year and go down to 3 years from 12% and you get 0.712. And then the fourth year, we're going to get the dividend for that year, and that's 0.636. Plus, we expect the price of the stock to be $27. So we discount that. That's the verb we use. I know it might sound silly, but that's the verb we use. We discount that $27 by that same present value multiplier. And here's the problem some people do. They go to year five. No, it's still the same year. Are you with me? Yeah? They're both going to happen. The dividend in the fourth year and the price of the value in the fourth year in 2018 are both discounted by the same present value multiplier. And if you do all those calculations, don't do them right now, we'll do them in a minute, you'll see that the value of the stock, we believe, should be $23.81. So we believe the present value, the value of, for us today, is $23.81. Yes? What's it selling for? 22. So Mr. Market is offering us a stock that we believe is worth almost $24 for $22. Now, if we required 15%, what would happen to that? Notice that the present value multipliers for 15% are a whole lot less. And if we required 5%, what would happen to the estimate? It would go up because if you go to 5%, you'll see the present value multipliers are a whole lot more. Are you with me? Now, doing it this way is a little cumbersome. What we can do is make it into a spreadsheet. How many people played with excuse? I'm sorry. Excess. Expel. Excel! Excel! Okay, we're going to do it. We're going to use Excel. Excel. Because spreadsheets make life a whole lot easier for us. And for you investors, you would-be investors, if you never use a spreadsheet, you really want to take the business, CIS 122B or 101, or just learn how to do it on your own. And so what we do is we create a little spreadsheet here with the years, the cash flows, the present multipliers, present value multipliers, and then the spreadsheet we can do the calculations pretty easily. I think it's much easier to comprehend and calculate. You with me? Especially if everybody had a laptop in here, which, you know, this is not Yale or whatever. Everybody has their own laptop. But watch what happens. If we just see, this is kind of redundant, right? Why do we have 2018 twice? Are you with me? What we should do is make 2018 one entry. So now we've removed a couple of the steps. We don't have to do five multiplications. We only have to do four multiplications and then come up with the discounted cash flows and then sum them up. Adding the dividend and the stock in the last year saves us a couple of manual calculations. But more importantly, it also allows us to use a special spreadsheet function to calculate the internal rate of return. Has anybody ever heard of the internal rate of return? This is something you don't normally get until the third or fourth year or a graduate level finance investment class. The internal rate of return is a measure of what rate of return we expect to get from a series of cash flows, including positive and negative flows. Someday when you take an upper level or graduate finance class, you will learn how to manually compute this. And it is not easy, folks. That's why we have computers. It's not horribly difficult, but it's sadistic. You got to try this, and then try that, and then try this, and then try that, and you got to oosh. And that's why we have computers. And so what we're going to do is we're going to enter the numbers and hit the enter key, and bingo. So in other words, we required a 12% rate of return from Pretzels Unlimited. But what do the numbers tell us will be our expected rate of return? And so if we go to the next slide, we will see that by using Excel, we've set up the spreadsheet a little differently. We need to show the outflow to get internal rate of return to work. We have to show how much is going out, because we had to buy the stock, right? $22. And then we put in the cash inflows, what we're going to expect to get, and bingo, it says, hey, 14.51%. And so it's a formula that the spreadsheet takes care of. Equal sign IRR, the values, you know, these values, and then you could put zero here for the approximate rate of return, or you could put your guess, because that's what the computer has to do. To compute internal rate of return, you have to guess first, and then go from there. So let's take a look on the spreadsheet. We're going to do one, don't worry, I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm going a little fast, but I want to do them. But on the spreadsheet here, Pretzels Unlimited Discounted Cash Flow sheet, worksheet, spreadsheet, and I've already got it up on the screen. And so here it is. I did the calculations the way we did it first, where I just put in the cash flows multiplied by the present value multiplier, and then those are the, okay, so here's the cash flows, here are the multipliers. And notice I used the formula. I didn't actually type them in. I'm tricky that way. And then multiplied C4 times D4, and then added those up and got $23.80. But here, all I had to do was put in, you don't even need the years. You can get rid of those. They're not important. But you put in the cash flows and then type internal rate of return equal sign IRR, open parentheses, C4 down to C8. Yeah, because I put an A. It was being tricky. And then I put 12% in as a guess. I could have put 0. This is a pretty straightforward one. Some of them are a little tricky. I could have put 0 and let the computer figure it out. But I put 12%, and it said, oh, no, you're going to get 14.51%. Are you with me? Pretty cool. And then if I say, well, you know what? I really don't think it's going to be $27. Maybe it's only going to be $25. Well, still, I get 12.75%. You understand what's going on here? It makes life a whole lot easier, doesn't it? It's to have a spreadsheet. Questions, thoughts? Going too fast? All right, because now we're ready to actually take a look at a problem. So take out worksheet number one, and let's do a problem together. Problem number 6. Who doesn't have worksheet number 1? Number 1 coming. Buck, number 1 coming. Okay, you got the present value table. All right, so let's. Okay. Jimba Jamba Jamba Juice. You heard of them, right? They sell you 800 calories of sugar. Okay. It's currently selling for $56 per share. So Mr. Market, as Benjamin Graham would say, is offering us the stock for $56. The dividends for the next year are expected to be $1.80 for 2015, $2 for 2016, and $2.25 for 2017. And we forecast the price per share to be approximately $75 at the end of 2017. So now if we desire a required rate of return of 10%, how do we come up with an estimate of what we believe the stock is worth to us today? Now, here's what I do. I'm going to do it. You guys follow me, unless you want to tell me what to do. Let me do it. I'll show you, because the first couple times is a little tricky. I write down the years. So I put down the years. So what are the years? 2015. Everyone should say 2016, because that's what comes out of 2015. 2016 and 2017. And then I put in either the word future cash flows or just cash flows. This is the money I expect to see coming into my account. They used to send you a check. They don't do that. It's all electronic now. So how much do we expect to get from Jimba Jamba Jumba Juice in 2015? Everyone say $1.80. Wait till I ask you. Okay, what are we going to get from Jimba Jamba Jumba Juice in 2015? $1.80. What do we expect to see in 2016? $2. What do we expect to see in 2017? $2.25 plus, what do we expect the stock price to be at the end of 2017? $75. Are you with me? Nod your head yes. Or go, no, Frank, I don't know what the hell you're doing. Okay, so what's $2.25 plus $75? $77.25. Now the next column, why don't I get this back on the screen here? Show you back Jimba Jamba Jamba Juice here. The next column are the present value multipliers, and you can write it out and just put PVM for 10%, because we said our required rate of return is 10%. Right? So go across the 10%. What's the present value multiplier for 10%? I don't understand why you don't answer me. Well, everybody, what's the present value multiplier for the first year for 10%? 909. Everyone, what is the present value multiplier for the first year for 10%? It's hard to check for comprehension if you just stand there and look at me. I really don't know what the hell's going on in your head. Okay, what's it for year number two? 826. What is it for year number three? 751. Everybody sees that? Nathan, you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody sees that? Okay, good. So now, this column is the discounted cash flow column. $1.80 times 0.909. That's your turn now. You got the calculators, right? Type in $1.80 times 0.909. What'd you get, Barbara? 1.6362. Yeah? Okay, now here's where you guys can be really tricky. If you hit the memory plus button and we do these calculations, you don't have to go back and add them up. If you want to be tricky, hit the memory plus button right now, but you don't have to. What's $2 times 0.826? 1.652, close enough. And then hit the memory plus button. And what's 7750 times 0.751?
1.68.
Whoa, 1.68? $77.57 times 0.751? 58.2025. And then hit the memory plus and memory recall, and you've already added the three up, or just add the three up manually afterwards. And if you have a spreadsheet, it's a whole lot easier, like baloney. You just type it in. Okay, so what do we believe the stock is worth? Adding these three numbers up. And we get a number that shows us that we believe the stock is worth more than what the market is asking us to pay for it. So we think it's a good deal. Make sense? Yes, Daniel.
Wasn't that 77.5?
What did I say?
57.
I don't know what I said. I'm getting old. 77.25 times 0.751? Okay. Can you take a joke? 58.0? 1475, and then when you add them all up, 61.30. Close enough. We want to avoid any pretense of precision. Do you understand what that means? We want to avoid acting like, oh yeah, that's what it's going to be in 3 years. We're just sort of blowing smoke around. Mirrors and flashing lights are all going off. Nod your heads yes. Oh, good. I'm so excited. Because, so, what?
You know, the 10% and 12%, the 5%, we're just guessing there.
That's right. We're just saying, what do we want to see? We'd like to see 10%. So run it with 10%. But with the spreadsheet, all you got to do, if we go back to the spreadsheet, when you have it in the spreadsheet, is just turn around and change it from 10% to 12% to 10%. And you see the numbers change? Or, oh, you know what? We're happy with 8%. And we don't know what these numbers are actually going to be. Folks, these are just guesses. Do you understand? We are just putting our finger up and trying to see which way the wind blows. But, in my humble opinion, you are tilting the odds in your favor when you do this. Yes? No? Okay, let's continue. Because it gets better. Alright. Now, a second example is a company that is not paying dividends. Here's Jeans or Us, folks. And you know, a nano jeans and techno biotech is going to change the world. They're currently selling for $21 per share, but it pays no dividends. We believe that Jeans or Us will sell for around $50 per share in 5 years. Our required rate of return is 13%. Well, how can we determine if this is a good investment? With no dividends, we normally can't use the dividend discount model, can we? Because that comes up with a big fat zero. Well, we can still use this model because what we do is we say, sure, the dividends are worth zero. This company's not going to pay me any dividends. But we expect the price to be $50 in, 5 years, and we require 13%. So go across the 13% down 5 years, and you should see 0.543. Multiply the price of the stock, $50, times 0.543, and we believe it's worth $27. What's the market pricing it at? 21. So is this a good deal for us? But now do you understand how risky it is? It's not paying any dividends. It's losing money. It might never get its product to market because it costs $500 to $600 to $800 million to get that drug pushed through the Food and Drug Administration pipeline. And this company might be $50 and it might be 50 cents. It's the kind of company that can turn $1,000 into $50,000 or 50 cents. Are you with me? And you have your eyes open now. You're not just sort of rolling the dice and saying, oh, somebody told me it's a great company. You now understand how risky it is versus a Pretzels Unlimited that makes something that people eat every day. Make sense? Yes, yes, yes. Good, good. So now let's do number 7. See, this is my favorite thing. This is what I could do this every day. If I just taught this one lecture every day, I would just. Okay, number 7. I'll read it. The price of biotechnology, nanotechnology, how's that for buzzwords, is $15 per share. The company pays no dividends, and we expect the price 3 years from now to be $35. How do we do that? Well, we'll take a look in a bit. We'll explain that. If our desired rate of return is 12%, would this be a good buy? We desire a 12% rate of return. So what's the value from the dividends, folks? Everyone should say zero. Wait till I ask you, what's the value from the dividends?
Zero.
But what do we believe the price of the stock will be in 3 years? $35. Go across the 12% 3 years, and the present value multiplier is 712. So multiply $35 times 0.712, and we believe the stock is worth to us $24.92. The current price is $15. Mr. Market is offering us a stock that we believe is worth about $25, but is selling for only $15. But now we understand that this is the kind of stock that is extremely risky, that is speculative. Would Benjamin Graham recommend you buying this stock? No, he would not. That's why I recommend, especially to new investors, that they stick primarily with companies that have been around for decades, that have paid dividends for decades, that will continue to pay dividends. Fine. After you have a Coca-Cola. McDonald's, they're sort of hurt. Actually, now would be a good time to buy McDonald's because everyone says it's really doing horribly. But hopefully it will do horribly in the future, because they're killing people. But that's my personal opinion. Okay, 3M and the like. And then after you have $5,000, $10,000 worth of those kind of companies, go ahead and buy First Solar. Go ahead and buy a Tesla or a GoPro or a Titter or a Farsbook. You with me? That's what I recommend. It doesn't mean you have to do what I recommend. If you want to load up your portfolio with all those very high-flying, risky stocks, go right ahead. Good luck. Because, the kick, you've already felt it, right?
Yeah.
You've already felt he's done even more riskier stuff than stocks. Yes.
Now, if we want to be a bank, why don't we just go buy all bank stocks?
That's a good, I think, well, the problem, it used to be very easy to buy banks and just put them away and forget about them, but what have they been doing lately? They got us into this mess in 2008 and 9, and they're going to, they've been doing the same thing you've been doing, right? And they're going to get us into another mess because they're still allowed to do it. So I don't know. But I do, I like banks, for the most part. I don't know, have you looked at U.S. Bank? They're a pretty well-run bank.
AIG's been pretty good.
Well, it's AIG, yeah, well, of course. We bailed them out. And actually, the taxpayers actually did make money off of AIG, by the way. Okay, so, you with me? All right, let's continue. Another method that's in the book is called the residual income method. It's really just the constant perpetual method, but it doesn't use dividends. And we're not going to do it because it's basically the same as the ones we already did. And maybe we'll come back to it later, but it's not important. Okay, Piano. How are we doing for time? Great. Okay, Piano. This is all great. But just where are we supposed to get all this historical information anyway? And just who decides what next year's earnings per share, sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, et cetera, are going to be, let alone the expected price of a stock 3 to 5 years from now? Well, before the internet, should we start using BI before the internet? This information was not readily available, folks. You didn't find it in many places. Now you find it everywhere. You would go to your broker and ask for it, or you would use one of the securities industry's trusted information sources. And traditionally, folks, the most respected source was, and in my humble opinion, still is one of the most, is the Value Line. Has anybody heard of the Value Line? No? Okay, well, you're going to play with it. That's the bonus assignment for Chapter 6, is to get in there, in a library, because it's very expensive. It's $600 a year. If you want it as an individual investor, I'm sure the library gets charged a whole lot more. It's still one of the most respected and trusted sources of data and analysis. Traditionally, it was often the only source many investors used for data and analysis, along with the company's materials. The company would send them the annual report and the quarterly reports. It is not cheap, but you go to the library and get it. Southwestern no longer carries it. We canceled it in the turmoil a few years ago. Very sad. But Chula Vista Main Library has it. At least they did. San Diego Central Library, plus several branches. I'm very lucky because we live in OB. And the Point Loma one, which is pretty close to our house, actually, has it. So my wife is an avid reader. She goes and gets all these historical fiction novels. And I go on a Sunday. This is what we do for fun, folks. And I go and I just play with the Value Line because it's huge. It's unbelievable. I'm a big fan of ValueLine, especially their timeliness and safety indicators. One study which ignored transaction costs and tax consequences only used their timeliness indicator. They have an indicator called time. Now is a good time to buy this stock. And what somebody did is they went back in over 20 years and said, okay, what would have happened if you had just bought that stock when it got a number one timeliness and then sold it as soon as it lost its number one? You would have creamed the market. You would have done really, really well. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen in the future. But can you find the indicators, the price projection, the historical data, the cash assets, the receivables, the inventory, other assets, the description, the analysis of the business, the historical annual rates, the insider institutional buying and selling, the amount of debt and number of shares outstanding in the company's financial strength, stability, price growth, and earnings predictability ratings? What? In your book, they have, I don't know how many people do have the book, not too many, don't tell me. They used McGraw-Hill. Now, McGraw-Hill is a very interesting choice. It's the company that makes the book. Right? They've made the textbook. And they're a stock, and they also own S&P, and they own newspapers and magazines and television stations. They're a media company. And they own S&P, which has a competitor to the ValueLine, which I haven't seen in years. I haven't seen it in about 10 years. And it was very bad then. I don't know if it's any better. But it was nowhere near as good as the ValueLine. So I can imagine the author said, we want to show them ValueLine. And the editors probably said, well, wouldn't you like to show them S&P? No, we want to show them the ValueLine. All right. Okay. Here it is. Bang! And that's just the top of the page. Here's the bottom of the page. It's a sip from the fire hose, folks. Do you like that analogy? When you were a kid, or maybe you're still, you used to go to the fire hose, to the garden hose and drink from the garden hose. How about, can you imagine you tried to drink from the fire hose? Right. And look at what they do, folks. They got the sales per share, the cash flow per share, the earnings per share, the dividends declared per share, and they go back in time. This means there was a recession, enter. And then they extrapolate out 3, 4, 5 years in advance. Are you with me? Remember why we said, and Mr. Rothenberg said, I'm always thinking 3 to 4 to 5 years in advance? Because trying to think 3 or 4 weeks or 3 or 4 months in advance or 3 or 4 minutes, it's a losing proposition. But this will tilt the odds in your favor. And it doesn't mean they're going to be right, folks. ValueLine makes mistakes. They'll tell you right from the beginning. And so there's the average annual P/E ratio that we used for the price models, the capital structure. Here's their analysis, their business analysis, the annual rates for the past 5 years, sales, cash flow, earnings, dividends, estimated 3 to 4 or 5 years in advance, quarterly sales, earnings per share, quarterly dividends. This is a wealth of information. And I apologize, dear students, because you're not supposed to copy this at the library, but I did. And then I put it, and then I scanned it in, and I put it on a PDF file, and I left it at home. So I apologize, because I was going to show you 3M, GE, Altria. I was going to show you what they say about the companies that we looked at, and you'll find that, you know, they're not really optimistic. They expect, you know, 7, 8, 9% to be reasonable over the next 3 to 5 years. But they will give you one big caveat. We know some of these are going to be wrong. And we know there's going to be volatility. Let's put ValueLine to the test. In late 2009, the price of McGraw-Hill was $28.73. Their price prediction for early 2013 was in the $48 to $68 range. On February 15, 2013, McGraw-Hill was at $45. Now think about it, folks. If you go back in 2009, that's when the world was going to end. Right? We had gone through the 2008 turmoil, and people were just still believing in the world was going to end. And in late 2009, they're saying, no, you don't understand. $29 stock is going to be worth $48. And they were pretty darn close. Actually, pretty darn good. When they made this prediction in 2009, the stock market had rallied from the depths of the 2008-9 crisis, But many people were still predicting the end of the world. By the way, some of them are still predicting that. Have you noticed that? They will always be predicting it. There's one guy, Porter Stansberry. He advertises quite a bit on the financial websites and other websites. And he always predicts the end of the world. And in his prediction, if you click on it, he'll tell you how we predicted the 2008 crisis. They also predicted 2009, the 2010, the 2011, 2012, 2013. By the end of this year, martial law will be instilled. That's what they say every year. One of these years, there's going to be another crisis. So let's now take a look at the value line for the fourth edition. In 2005 or so, they were expecting the price to be anywhere from 70 to 82. Now, this was 2005, and they're expecting 2008 and 9 to be 70 to 82. What do you think happened? How did they do in mid-2005? Well, their price prediction for late 2009 was in the 66-82, and the price was hovering $24 in late 2009. Well, what happened? It reached $70 in mid-2007, so they were actually a little bit early, and started falling as the credit market started reacting to the home mortgage loan crisis. McGraw-Hill owns Standard & Poor's. You've heard of them. They're the people who were saying that these mortgage-backed securities that were based on optional adjustable rate mortgage liar loans, that people could just, as long as they could fog a mirror and say they were making $100,000 to get a $500,000 loan that they had to pay $1,600 a month for, next year had to pay $1,900, and then $2,500, and then $3,200 the year after that, and they were rating these things AAA. What the hell does that mean? Wait till we get the bonds. The best of the best. They were rating these garbage loans as AAA. And there were people who wanted to, they wanted the government to prosecute them for that. And Standard Poor's said, sorry, we goofed. Well, they weren't the only ones. And Value Line, I love Value Line because they give you their overall market commentary. Wait till you go there. You'll see this huge, well, it depends. Sometimes Southwestern and other places has a huge book folder with all the stock stuff in it, and then a smaller one with the index and the market commentaries. Some libraries just break them up into a bunch of little ones and have numbers on them. But they come out every week with their market commentary, what they think next 3 to 5 years is. And reading it in 2009 was like reading somebody watching the Titanic in slow motion or train wreck. And they were saying, we don't think it's going to be too bad, but there's definitely a rough time ahead. It's starting to look a whole lot worse. Things are getting bad. And they were not happy about it. And their prediction for mid-2007 was even uglier. But what about their third edition? In 2003, this was after this is early 2003. This is after two and a half years of really market ugliness. They were predicting the stock to be between 90 and 110. Now this is split. The stock split, so that's why the numbers are larger. And in early 2003, the Value Line predicted that the price of McGraw-Hill would be around $90 to $110. Why so much higher? Because they split their stock 2-for-1. You have to divide these prices by 2 to compare them to the previous 2 predictions. And they were bang on the money, folks. McGraw-Hill reached 120 level by the end of 2006. That's $60 today's numbers because it's split adjusted. You will hear people poo-poo and call these people fuddy-duddies and old-fashioned and stodgy. But you know what? They've been around a lot longer than most all of us have been alive. And I would love to see how these people who make fun of them, I'd like to see their long-term results versus the Value Line's results. Who do you think have better results? I think the Value Line. And so that is it, folks. Now, any questions, any comments? We have plenty of time to work through worksheet number 2. So that's good. Do you feel terrified for the exam on Thursday? No? I hope not. Because if you've been studying chapters 5, everything in the presentation, all the lecture notes about stocks, introduction to stocks, and then can do, because there's no other than calculations, there's nothing in chapter 6 that's on the multiple choice Scantron portion, just the calculations. And now, once you've learned these techniques, folks, it doesn't mean you're going to be the next Peter Lynch, the next Warren Buffett. I hope some of you will be. But you will, in my humble opinion, tilt the odds in your favor towards long-term, consistent results. Not this, you know, I got 100% yesterday and then lost it all today. You know, not that kind of investor. That's not the kind of investor I hope you will be, but that's your decision. But afterwards, and I tell you truthfully that when I followed this technique and listened to Mr. Buffett and listened to Mr. Graham, I did okay. In fact, I did pretty darn well with a couple stocks. And when I didn't follow it and I bought these kind of stocks that had no dividends and they were trying to, you know, turn $1,000 into $50,000, they all did to a one. They all went up and the But I didn't do that many, so I didn't mind. And it wasn't that much loss. But when you do this, you're going to do all your calculations, do all your research, and then what do? All the numbers you come up with, what do? Throw them away. Put them through the shredder. Burn them under a full moon. Because they are just smoke in the wind, folks, and they will just disappear in front of your mind, in front of your eyes. But you do them, you then throw them all away and ask yourself, do I really want to own 3M? Do I really want to own Nike or FedEx or GoPro? And in his book, One Up on Wall Street, Peter Lynch did pretty much the same thing. I like what he did. He kept 3-ring binders. And he put in all the notes he did and the clippings from newspapers and the like. And this was in the 70s and 80s. The internet wasn't around yet. And then after he had done all his work, he would hold the binder in his hand and say, this is FedEx. I am buying FedEx because. And he'd give himself this 30-second, 60-second, 90-second story for why he's buying it or for why he's selling it or for why he's holding it. Are you with me? And I always thought that was the story. If the story changes, then maybe you want to sell, maybe you want to buy, whatever. I always liked that idea. And I kind of do the same thing, but mostly what I do is I just say, as Mr. Buffett said, if I'd want to own the entire company, go ahead and buy 10 shares. If I could buy the entire company, I would buy it. He buys the entire company. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments? I wish you the best of success. Les deseo los éxitos. How do you say it? Éxitos. Magníficos. I want you to go out there and kill them, folks. Slowly. All right? Okay, so now let's take a look now at worksheet number 2. So I'm going to pass out worksheet number 2 and also the assignment sheet, and remembering that the assignment and worksheet number 2 and worksheet number 1. Wait a minute. Where is the rest of worksheet number 2? Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Did I give it? I passed it out already?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't have worksheet number 2, pass these guys. Okay, pass these around. Who doesn't have worksheet number 2? And then I'm going to pass around the assignment sheet, and it might be a good idea for you to also do what? It might be a good idea for you to do the assignment sheet, because the assignment sheet is exactly like worksheet number 1 and 2, which is going to be exactly like the problems on the exam on Thursday. So let's pass these out. I'm passing out the assignment. Yes. And remember, everything's on the website. Plus, there are answer keys. There are that's worksheet number 2. There is the commentary for the worksheets. There are answer keys for the worksheets. The spreadsheets, if you have a computer, play with the spreadsheet. Play with the spreadsheet files. Because this stuff, I mean, folks, this is... It's amazing. I will talk to people who are investors, and I will ask them, you know, well, what's that? Well, we're getting to talking. And this one woman, this was right at the end, I forget, a year and a half ago in the fall, when Apple had done its meteoric rise, and a lot of people got completely burnt because it dropped, you know, 500, whatever it was. And she just said, well, I will never invest again. I bought Apple, and it has fallen so far. I said, but it's a long-term investment. You got to hold on. She goes, no, I will. She just, it's just total cluelessness about how stocks work, about how the market works, and yet she didn't take business 123, obviously, and she bought high and then sold low and said she'll never do it again until the next time, right? I'm at this party trying to get this woman to listen to reason. No, forget it. We are not reasonable people. We are unreasonable people. That is the human condition. So let's now work on worksheet number 2. And I will stay past the... Did you get one? Yeah, I'm sorry. Number 2, right there. Okay, so I'll stay past the 10:45 time for those of you who want to stick around and do more, because I could do this a whole lot longer than most people would ever want to do it. All right. Sorry, still hopping around. I got a call into the podiatrist, believe it or not. My ribs are a whole lot better, folks. I can breathe again. That was not fun. I don't wish that on anybody. Cracked or bruised ribs. Because every time I sneezed, it felt like somebody was stabbing me and hitting me with a baseball bat right in the rib. Simultaneously. Bang! And I would just sit. I would lay there and yell and just cry. And my wife would say, are you okay? I said, no. There's nothing I can do about it. Give me the mic. I didn't like it. One, number one. Number one. Who will read number one? You've heard of them.
Their 5-year average PE is 18. Disney's earnings per share are expected to grow at 12% next year. What would you expect the price to be next year?
Okay, so what do we? Which model are we going to use here? Do you remember the models, the price ratio models? Yeah? No? Okay. Right, price-to-earnings model. This is the price-to-earnings ratio model. And so what we do is we take the 5-year average, which is, everyone should say 18. What's the 5-year average? 18. We multiply it by the current earnings per share. We multiply it by the current earnings per share. $4.50, and then we grow those earnings by what we are told, or what Value Line says, or what the analysts say, or what Disney sort of intimates in their earnings call, by 12%. So we multiply times 1 plus 12%, which is 1.12. Everybody make sense? Everybody make sense? Okay, so multiply 18 times 450 times 1.12. And what do we think Disney's going to be worth next year? How much? 90.72. What's the price ratio model saying? It's overpriced. We think the price ratio model, at least, is saying that we think the Disney is overpriced. So would we buy this based on this information alone? No, but that's just one thing, folks. This is one thing. Doesn't mean you should buy, doesn't mean you shouldn't buy. It's just one piece of information. Now, the next two are going to be basically the same. Number two, somebody besides David.
Do you think cash flow per share, CFCF, is currently $6.33 per share? The 5-year average price to cash flow per share ratio is 13. we expect their cash flow per share to grow by 10% next year. What would you expect the price to be next year?
So, we are looking at the cash flow per share, which is more than the earnings per share, which is typical because of depreciation and other related expenses. We see that the five-year average is 13, and we expect, or the analysts tell us, or Value Line tells us, that we're going up, or that they're going to go up by 10%. So we do the exact same thing. Five-year average? Come on, why don't you say it? I don't understand. Is it not against your religion? What's the five-year average? 13. What's the cash flow per share? 6.13. And what's the growth rate? 1 plus 10% or 1.10. And again, not too optimistic. What'd you get? 87.66 is Jacob? Is he right? No, wait. Kyle, I'm sorry. Can't take a joke? You both wear baseball caps. He's not here. All right, so questions? Number three. Basically the same exact thing, except instead of earnings per share, cash flow per share, we now use the sales per share. Sales per share, SPS, $28.70, five-year average, 3.1, and the growth rate, 8%. So, five-year average, 3.1 times sales per share of 28.70 times 1 plus 8% or 1.08. And that, again, does not give us a very optimistic prediction. What is the price to sales model telling us we believe that it's going to be worth next year? 96.08. And this is typical, folks. Currently, when you use these models, it's saying that the stock market's overvalued. We'll see. Okay. Number four. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Piece of cake? Okay. What a great class. What? Not like last semester's class. Dumb.
What was the last one? 90.06.
Supposed to say, how dumb were they? Did I do this yet? Not in this class. Thank you for asking. It took them an hour and a half to watch 60 minutes. Did you know that? I like that one. Okay, number four. Okay, CenterPoint Energy, a utility company, an energy company. Ah, what type of model? Okay, let's read. CenterPoint Energy is currently selling for $21.75 per share. It has been consistently paying 99 cents in dividends. Are the dividends growing? No. So which model do we use? The zero growth model. And it'll be in the exact same order, folks. Okay. The same order was in the presentation and the worksheets and the assignment on the exam. Can I make it any plainer than that? Okay. Zero growth. Right. They're not growing their dividends. They're a utility. They're an energy company. They have not been growing their dividends. Our expected rate of return is 5%. So we don't really want that much from a company that's not growing their dividends because we can't expect that much. What would we expect the price to be? What would we consider a good investment? So the zero growth model, you have the formula sheet, annual dividends divided by our expected rate of return. This is review from last week, right? Nod your head yes or go, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Piano. Where's the dividend? Oop, I forgot to write that down. Sorry. Write all the givens, Piano. That's what you learned when you were in math. I believe it or not, my undergraduate is in mathematics. I can differentiate and integrate. Just a few formulas. I don't remember all of them. So what's the annual dividends? 99 cents divided by what's our expected rate of return? 5%. So what do we think it's worth? $19.88. 80? Okay. Again, avoid any pretense of precision. Avoid precision like the plague. So, is it worth to us $21.75? Not really, no. We'd have to lower our required rate of return to be happy with this stock. We're not going to get 5% over the long term. Well, it doesn't mean we won't. It's just the model is saying that. Questions, thoughts? Now, number five is Waste Management Company. And I often use Waste Management Company as a good example of a stock that people should look at, not because it is necessarily a good stock to buy right now, but because when people talk about GoPro and Titter and Tesla and all these technologies that are incredibly new and exciting, what does Waste Management do? They pick up the trash. Is somebody going to be picking up the trash 50 years from now? Yeah. Are we going to be playing on Facebook and Twitter 50 years from now? I don't know. Probably. I don't know. But I do know somebody's going to have to deal with the trash. Hopefully there will be a lot less of it. So they're currently selling for around $54.50. And they're paying $1.50 dividend. Because you're not. Now, what can we say? They had Kazunite, salud, dinero, y more. Just salud, dinero, no more. Salud y dinero. El tiempo para disfrutar los tres. Right? Is that how you say it, right? Yeah. Okay, so they have been growing the dividend at a constant rate of 6%. Down, like, what do you know? What are you going to use? Constant perpetual growth model. They've been growing their dividend at 6%. So the formula is the same as the annual, the zero growth model, except we add those two terms. Annual dividends times 1 plus the growth rate, dividend growth rate. And you have the formula sheet, which you're allowed to bring on Thursday. You better bring on Thursday. Bring the formula sheet because it's got the present values on the back. And we divide that by our required or expected rate of return. Minus the dividend growth rate. Make sense, everybody? That's on your formula sheet. Check it out. Make sure you can find it on the formula sheet. So, what's the annual dividends? $1.50 times 1 plus, how much is it growing? 6%, 1.06, divided by what's our required rate of return. I didn't write that down. Piano, write down all the 10%. 10% expected rate of return, or required rate of return. So 10% minus 6%, 0.01 minus 0.06. So $1.50 times 0.06? 159? Close enough for government work. Divided by 0.1 minus 0.06 or 0.04. And what do we believe the stock is worth? 39.75. It's selling for $54.50. Are stocks overpriced? Yeah, they are. Oh, well. How far overpriced they will be? That's what people say. Well, aren't they overpriced? They're richly valued. Richly valued. But that doesn't mean they won't go higher, folks. Especially the third year of a presidential cycle is often the best year for stocks, which is kind of strange. But that's, you go back in time, that's been the truth. It's been strange. Not always, but and Obama's been a very different president. His third year wasn't the best, but his fourth, no, it's fifth. He had some really good years. So Obama's been very different than most presidents. I know it just drives some of the Republicans wild, but he's been one of the best, or if not the, we'll find out. But he's, so far he's been the best president ever for stocks. Isn't that insane? And they hate him. They absolutely hate the guy. Okay, number six. Now, here's where we're going to get tricky, folks. And if you have a computer and you have excuse, then boy, doesn't life easier for you, but we got to do it the hard way. Have you heard of Yum Brands? I'm sorry? Yum, yeah, I know. Isn't it dumb? Yum. But that's the company that has Pizza Crap, a Kentucky Fried Rat, and Taco Bell. Smell. Bell, right. And they have been going great gangbusters and catching up to McDonald's. In fact, whipping McDonald's butt left and right center up in China. But things are a little more rough now. So they are selling for $77.50, or were a few weeks ago. And we expect the dividends for the next 3 years to be $1.64, $1.70, and $1.76. They've been growing their dividends. We forecast the price to share, or we go look at Value Line, or somebody else. We think somebody else is good. And then we believe at $105 at the end of 2017. Our required rate of return is 11%. So how do we pull this off? Now, do you want me to do it, or do you want to tell me what to do? We like to create the beautiful spreadsheet with years. Okay, what are the years? 2015, 2016, and 2017. What are the future cash flows? What's the dividend in 2015? $1.64. What's the dividend in 1.70 in 2016, and then $1.76 plus Value Line tells us they think the stock's going to be worth $105. So what is that, the total of those two? $106.76. Yeah? Adam, you do this already? He's going to watch. Okay. So now, we need the present value multipliers for 11%. I'm sorry. 11%. And Kyle's already got it written down. What are they for 11%?
901.
812. 0.731. And what we do is we multiply $1.64 times 0.919. And memory clear. If you want to use your memory button, clear out the memory and do $1.64 times 0.901. And what is the discounted cash flow value for the first year? 1.477. Hit memory plus. Then $1.70 times 0.812.
$1.38.
And forget all the other digits. Hit the memory plus. And then $106.76 times 0.731 is 100.20. No, the whole thing. $106.76 times 0.731. 7804. Yeah? And then hit the memory plus, and you should get the number when you hit memory recall, or just add these three up. And what do we think it's worth? $80. And 90 cents. Remember, no precision. Close enough. So, is Yum destined to give us 11%? No, but it looks like it might. It's not a guarantee, but it sure does look like we could expect if the future occurs and they continue to raise their dividends and the price goes up to 105. Yes?
That by multiplying.
You multiply each future cash flow The $1.64 we're going to get this year. The $1.70 we're going to get next year. The $1.76 from dividends plus what we expect the price of the stock to be. Now, do we know it's going to be 105? No, it could be 45 if the market crashes. It could be 150. We don't know. We're just blowing smoke left and right. We're tilting the odds in our favor. We're saying, well, Value Line said it's going to be 105. And they've been pretty good in the past. Doesn't mean they're going to be perfect. In fact, they screw up just like everybody else. Okay? Yay. Now, here goes a company, the kind of company that I was a sucker for 10, 15 years. Sucker, loser, what is it? Number 7. The price of BioLace Technology. This is a real company, folks, based in Orange County, I think, close to L.A., right? As you get closer to L.A., you see more and more boob jobs and tummy tucks and face things. And this company is right in there. They're vanity, vanity, all is vanity. They're currently selling for $2.05 a share. They currently are losing money and they pay no dividends. What a great combination, right? But they have patents on teeth cleaning and whitening technologies that should be very popular and profitable in the future. The average analyst estimate for the stock next year is $3.50, which would be, what, a 70% jump in 1 year? We think the price is going to be $6 in 5 years. Well, why do we think that? I don't know. We looked at Value Line, or we just spitballed it or whatever. So if our required rate of return is 14%, what would we think this company is worth? Well, it's not paying any dividends, right? So what's the value of the dividends? Zero. But we believe the stock is going to be worth, we can put zero here if you want, because anything plus zero is zero. It's not zero, but anything plus zero is whatever it is. $6, and then 5 years at 14%. Go across 14%, down 0.519. And what do we believe the stock will be worth to us today? $6 times 0.519. $3.11. So is it more than what the market is offering us? Yeah, so we would consider it a decent buy. But what do we know about a company like this? Yeah, it's very risky. It's just as likely to be 20 cents as it is to be $2 or $6 or $12. Now you are armed and ready to go out there. Questions, thoughts? And take a look at BioLace, by the way. Look it up, because it's pretty exciting, this stuff. The biotech world, folks, I am still firmly convinced. I might turn out to be wrong, but think about how much some of you don't even remember, but the dark ages when people didn't even have a cell phone and some people walked around with a brick. That's what they used to call it, the brick. It was a cell phone that looked like a brick. There's a little hamster inside running around. And 20 years from now, I am firmly convinced the biotechnology world will make that jump look tame. All right? Those of you who want to do some more of these problems, stick around, and I will go over them. And I will be happy to answer any questions about Chapter 5. In fact, I'll leave on the... Thank you. And so who snuck in? Nathan, yes. Isaiah, no. Kenny, yes. Kyle, yes. Christina, Rita, Elizabeth, Galarza, yes. Vicky, no. Jerry, no. Raul, no. Daniel, no. Christian, Raggio, no. Ricardo, yes. Isaiah Tapia.
Miguel.
You're Miguel Serrano. Yes. Martinique, no. Elizabeth Velasquez, see. And Jacob, no. And Luis. No, Luis didn't show up. It's sad. Why don't people show up? I don't know. Yes, Betsy.
I don't think you have to do
it. Okay. Send me an email, because my spreadsheet with all the grades in it is at home.
Okay.
Okay? But you haven't done anything differently, have you?
Uh-oh.
Okay, here's the spreadsheet from
or
last
year. Last time.
Oh, okay, then don't look at that.
So how do I check this?
Send me an email, and I will do the grades and send it back.
Oh, okay.
And next Tuesday, after the exam, I'll have another spreadsheet.
Oh, so
wait. I got you. Just 5 and 6. But remember, 5, that was the big chapter. And then 6 is all calcs. All the stuff we just did. If you understood this, you've got 6 down. And 5 is about dividends and stock types and investment theories and transactions and markets and indices. All the stuff in chapter 5. The worksheets plus the presentations. Yeah, forget the book because it goes into too much detail. You're welcome. Elizabeth, how you doing? All right. What?
I said I think.
You think? Okay. Well, no, after Tuesday, right? Okay. Signing off.